Welcome everyone to the Live from the Code Bar podcast, recorded from the Code Theme Bar of Fenwood Manor. I'm your host, Robert. On today's show, we are going to be talking with Spencer Beebe, creator of the puzzle Lost in the Shuffle, which is a series of puzzles all based on a deck of cards. Welcome, Spencer, to the Code Bar.
Wow, thanks for having me. I'm lucky they don't check ID to let people in here.
Not at all. Everybody is welcome in the Code Bar. We were talking before the show. You are one of many puzzle people that have shown interest in the show recently, and I am absolutely in love with everything that these people, you included, have done. Your puzzle, you did send me a copy of it when we talked about how you were going to come on the show. And I will say up front, I know we said it before the show, but I'll say it while we're recording. I absolutely love this puzzle. The Lost in the Shuffle puzzle is absolutely amazing. It is just perfect enough that you can work on it and take a break and work on it and take a break. And sometimes you get those aha moments, and sometimes you're like, how does that work? And you come back to it later, and then you maybe get that moment. So it's absolutely amazing thing. So each card being its own puzzle, I love it. Why don't you tell us how you got into these things, how you got into puzzling?
Puzzling in general. I started off probably like for my professional puzzling career, started on the escape room side of things. So in 2016, me and some like-minded pals got together and opened up an escape room. It seemed to go well. We opened up another escape room and then did not survive the pandemic. We were in a position where our landlord was like nice and was like, you guys could just get out of the lease if you want. And we were like, really? it was very, very sad, but it was like too good of a deal to pass up. But then with that, during that time, during the pandemic, I feel like a lot of at-home puzzle game makers have like a similar story where it's like, during the pandemic, what else was I going to do besides make puzzles that people can play at home? So this, the idea for Lost in the Shuffle came a little bit before the pandemic, but the actual like production of it actually ramped up during all that downtime.
Very nice. There's just so many different types of puzzles, and your website has just enough on it that it doesn't give anything away, of course, but there is a hint system on there, which is good, but it doesn't give any answers away. I love the videos. So obviously you've been into some editing with the videos. The first video where it's kind of introducing the game with the talking computer, it's hilarious. And anybody that's listening to the show, go check that out on the webpage. Obviously, I'm going to be putting the website up on the show notes. But just check out that video. It's hilarious, and you're going to love it. And it just gives a good introduction to the game. So obviously, you said that before the pandemic, you came up with the whole idea, basically, or not the whole idea, but an idea. Mm-hmm. Tell me more. How did it come up? I mean, why a deck of cards? Why something like this?
A lot of my projects just involve cards. I think I just love them. In the first escape room we designed, we had a deck of cards in the room, and there was four puzzles contained in the deck of cards. And then it was actually one of my colleagues at the escape room he was like, you know, we could probably just take these decks of cards and sell them like individually. And I was like, no, just four puzzles? No. And I was like, but maybe if there was more puzzles. Yeah. And then as with most of my puzzle projects, the narrative started off as like a cool secret society, intrigue, danger. And then I get bored with my own ideas, and then I get sillier ideas, and those appeal to me more and draw me back in. And then the story winds up being very, very silly, especially compared to what the initial one was. So yeah, and I also really do like playing the heel character. So it was a lot of good fun to make myself a buffoon for this game who hopefully you love to hate.
Now, the puzzle itself, for those who haven't played it yet, I'm hoping everybody will go pick up a deck, because it's just so much fun to play. There is no time limit on this. It's not like it's a treasure hunt where you got to be first to solve it. It is something you can do at your own pace. From the start, when you talked about the conception of your idea, from when you were in the escape room to when it was out there for people to get, what was the process there, and how long is that process?
It took me 3 years for this one. A lot of that was not having a clear direction in the beginning, and then a lot of that was feature creep, in a sense, where I think I had the game sort of like nice to where it was a perfectly fun game, but it was actually only like 30 puzzles that were like really good. And I had the idea like, man, it would just be nice. It'd be such good like symmetry to have 53 puzzle or 52 puzzles in a 52 card deck of cards. Those numbers are slightly off, but you get what I mean.
Yep.
And then I was like, as soon as I had the idea, I was like, damn it, I'm going to have to do it. Now that I've had like the idea was like, I could tell it was a good idea, which meant I was probably going to have to do it. I wouldn't be satisfied if I didn't do it. I think I've heard a lot of people tell stories about like other creative projects, and that seems to be like a common occurrence, I think, where you'll have a fun idea and you're like, man, it's a lot of work. But the fact that I had the idea is like, I'm angry I've had the idea because now I won't stop until I deliver.
You can't think of anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was in that like sort of retooling it of like, what, let me bring this thing up to 52 puzzles. And then I was like, well, what if all 52 puzzles unlocked a secret puzzle called Puzzle 53? And then I was like, what if it was really, really corny with how super important Puzzle 53 should be? And that's where it started to get like a little bit cornier. And then, yeah. And I also really like the idea of the player taking on like, you're not taking on the role of someone else. You are the player. Like, you bought a puzzle game and you're going to play a puzzle game, but somehow this is all, you've still fallen into my plot and my plan, even though you're just doing what you're supposed to. So I like ideas that are fun and entertaining where you just have to be yourself. I'm not asking you just to suspend too much disbelief as far as your role in the game, because that's actually true. So in a lot of my projects that I've got coming up are that as well.
So yeah, that's something that this is very much, you're yourself when you're playing it. You're not like a mystery box where you're taking on the role of a detective trying to solve a murder or something like that, or that's solve right. a crime. You're just trying to solve these puzzles. And on the webpage again, and I actually, to tell you the truth, I didn't realize this until this morning when I was researching, getting ready and stuff like that, that you have a really cool feature on the site where you can put in the answers. And the really cool thing is that you don't have to specifically say what puzzle it is. You're just putting in the answer, the one word answer, and the site will tell you then if that's correct, and then we'll list you with your team name. And I'm up there mm-hmm. with the code bar now, and it will list what puzzles that you've completed. And you can keep coming back to the site to see what you've completed and what you need to keep going with. And it's just nice and easy to navigate rather than trying to have to navigate to each individual puzzle and putting in an answer. So I really love the feel of that. You also have a really thought out rule section that is almost more of an explanation of the game as much as it is a rule mm-hmm. section. So I really think that that helped lead me to where I might need to go or something like that. And of course, then there's the videos, which again leads you to something else if you watch them carefully and take advantage of what's being said as well. So all of that combined makes obviously a really, really fun game that you can take your time on. And that's one of the rules that you say. There is no race. It's not a rush. You're not mm-hmm. going to be, you know, solving something. You don't get any extra points for solving it before somebody else. So have you, in creating this, obviously, apart from the escape room, have you done other puzzles before this, or was this the introduction and now we're going into the more Spencer puzzles from now on? Where are we going here?
Sure. So this is the first tabletop, like at home puzzle game that I've designed to completion, I will say.
Okay.
I did make design a game for the Facebook Puzzle Secret Santa gift exchange, which is a very fun secret Facebook group where if you fancy yourself a puzzle designer and just want to make some fun puzzles just for fun, you can put together as big as you want or as small as you want, and it'll get mailed to some stranger and you'll get one in return. And so I had a much bigger, more grandiose production style of puzzle game planned initially. And so I made that as a one-off for the Secret Santa exchange. It's a lot easier to design a big epic game if you only need to make one of them.
And so I know you did one just recently for Puzzle Temba for the the Facebook page that's been doing that recently as well. I haven't solved that one yet, but I did just see, what was that, day 13 or 12?
Day 13. Yeah.
Day 13, yep. So that was really cool.
I'm trying to get out there, put some puzzles out there. So they were kind enough to let me make a puzzle for Puzzle Timber over at Mysterious Package Co. And also the Cryptex Hunt was kind enough to let me design some puzzles for their online puzzle hunt.
Oh, very nice.
I really, really enjoyed the very first one. It's probably the coolest, whatever. Maybe they're all great, but secretly we all know the first one's the best. But yeah, so I want to say the fourth and the fifth, they were kind enough to let me make a puzzle or two for those.
Very nice. So Lost in the Shovel, just to get back to your game, obviously it's a deck of cards filled with puzzles, and we're reading right from your rules here, filled with puzzles, solving the puzzles will unlock chapters of a story that will lead you to your final challenge, which you have quite clearly said is puzzle 53. So when you solve a puzzle, the answer goes into the game page and you earn brain matter or points. And I really love this, by the way. I just noticed this today. I started typing in my answers. I work with a journal, and I know people that are listening aren't going to see this, but anytime I solve one of your puzzles, I write it in a journal. Write the answer, write how I got it. That way, you know, if I ever come back to it, I've got that as an answer to a puzzle. And I do that with my treasure hunting as much as I do it with everything. But I've been writing everything in this notebook. And then today I was on your page and I just put in my team name, code bar, of course, and just started putting in my things. And then as you put in and sort of get the correct answers, new videos come up and you progress a little bit further. So it's not just that you're progressing more in the story of solving the puzzles. There is a story, online story, that you're progressing along as well. So that is a really cool aspect of, it's not just a deck of cards. There is more to it.
Yes. Yeah. I did want there to be a sense of progression as you go, like a little bit of a reward in that you get rewarded with the, you know, extra story beats with some silly videos. But you also get rewarded with actual helpful information unlocks as you go. So the very, very first play tests that I did, the website had all of the possible puzzles listed. There was just like blanks. There's, you know, 52 blanks listed. And all the playtest groups just went to the top left and was like, okay, that's the, you know, Ace of Diamonds. Let's look at that. And I didn't like how everyone solved all the puzzles in the exact same order, because they don't, you know, they're not arranged in difficulty that way. So you might, you know, the third one you get to is actually a pretty tough one, and people didn't want to move on until they had done it. And so there's a lot of design and iteration that went into getting people, you know, comfortable enough to leave a puzzle to go to another one that might be a little easier.
That's what I noticed. I did notice that.
I want it to be entertaining. So I don't want try to eliminate as much frustration as possible while still having it be challenging, which is the whole tricky bit.
There was just enough that you solve one and then you can move on to another one. And that has, you might have no idea about that. So you might move on to the next one after that. So they're not in an order of like the ace being up to the king being the hardest, that sort of order. But, you know, you might start off at the fifth or the fourth, and you could solve that, and then you go back to the number two, and that one you can't solve. That's the way I've been working through it. I've kept the deck together the whole time, and I'll take out of order, and I'll take a couple of the cards, and I'll be like, how does this work with this card? And I've started noticing, and I did unlock that clue that, you know, sometimes multiple cards can be used.
Yeah.
Yes. And what I really love is it looks so professional. And a lot of times, well, not just
you're the first person in my whole life that has said that about me. So I'm going to print that out and frame it.
It's not just that it looks professional. It's that it feels professional and it works professional. What I mean by that is that one of the puzzles I was working on today is putting cards together. And the way that you do it, more often than not, in terms of some printing, in terms of how things are drawn out, there can be times where you go, oh, close enough is good enough. Okay. And in your puzzles so far, and all the ones that I've done, it close enough sometimes is not good enough. You do need to get that precise
spot. Now that sounds like what people say to me all day.
And there was one where one card overlaps another card, and then you can sort of see it, and there's one where you have to sort of make a steeple out of the cards. And I was sitting there for the longest time going, how am I doing this? And I was trying to balance it, and I was like, just put a little bit of tape on there. And sure. I ended up doing it, and the tape came off because it was their deck of cards. So it was really easy to just peel the tape off when I'm done. So didn't do any damage, no harm, no foul. But I got that perfect look exactly how I needed it because I used it that way. But for 10 minutes beforehand, I was sitting there going, why isn't this bouncing up and how can I make this work? So it is so amazing that when I did do that and I used tape and I got it precise, but how precise it was, how perfect it was. The fact that there's 52 cards in this thing, that some of them work together, that they are that precise when you put them together, it really is amazing that it just looks so good. And on small cards as well, just makes all the difference.
Thank you.
that was me just going off a little bit, so there was no real question on that. But what I did want to talk to you about is, obviously, where do you go from something like this with Lost in the Shuffle? Is there plans to go further next, to go somewhere else? Or do you think it might be something that you might go with another deck of cards with more puzzles? Where do you think you're going with this?
I've got sort of two concrete projects planned. They're both sort of bigger. They're more logistically challenging as far as a production. The Lost in the Shuffle is such a great like first project because like a deck of cards is like something that people produce all the time. There's infrastructure and support and stuff that's already in place for printing a deck of cards. So it was a lot more, I guess, I had a lot more confidence going into it that like, if I design a fun game, the physical component, I'll be able to produce. Whereas the other stuff I have planned is a lot more custom compartments and containers and fun props and that sort of thing.
A little bit more work.
Correct. A lot more like, you know, custom ordered. The next game that hopefully will be coming out arrives in a locked briefcase. So the first set of puzzles is getting into the briefcase, and then everything inside is the belongings of whoever the briefcase belongs to. And so just with that, there's just so much fun in trying to get really sneaky with what could be in a briefcase. So, you know, and at first glance could be seemingly, you know, like innocuous, but when you dig into it, you'd be like, oh wow, there's all the secret stuff here. I really like taking innocuous things or you know, small details and making it be like the focus of, you know, something that's often overlooked, and then all of a sudden that has to become the main focus.
I love that. And that sounds amazing. Just to get something like that in the mail, like I've gotten puzzle boxes and, you know, you open them up and you lay out all the compartments or lay out everything that you need and you get started by looking through everything. But to have that puzzle where almost like a lockbox sort of thing where you mm-hmm. can't even start the puzzle until you get into it. That's an amazing idea.
And a suitably silly narrative already planned out for that.
Of course. Now, the good thing is, and you did mention this in the rules as well, is that it's not a trivia competition. And by that, you mean that go ahead and you can use Google, search, do everything that you need to do. There's nothing that will hurt you by obviously searching and trying to get the answer that you need. And the other thing that you mentioned there is that, as we kind of mentioned just before, there's no need to mark or destroy or cut the cards, which is a big thing that I've noticed lately in the puzzle community, especially with some of the puzzle creators that I've already spoken with. There is a big aspect now of making games where they can be reusable, where they can be resold or passed on or, you know, just overall replayed if need be, because you don't have anything to destroy, or if there is something to destroy, and that's not this case here, but if there is something to destroy, you can easily, they have maybe a refill of it or something like that.
Right.
I was talking with Rita, the creator of the Emerald Flame, the other day. She's going to be on the podcast, or she's been on the podcast. It's going to be released soon. But her idea was with the Emerald Flame was to have those refill packs just for that sort of idea that it's not a one-off thing. You can either complete it and then pass the game on or resell. And in that puzzle community group that we're a part of on Facebook, we see that a lot is up for sale, and they have a list of all the different puzzles. And I've actually seen Lost in the Shuffle a couple of times on there now that I've been.
Yeah, I keep an eye out for it. I've seen it once. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's your idea when it comes to that sort of thing in puzzles? Obviously, you've got this game that, that can do that. But do you think that in the way that this the puzzles work, that's a good thing?
Yes. So it is. It is a limitation to make it so that, you know, nothing needs to get destroyed or written on. And so there are games that take advantage of that. And it's oftentimes very, very fun to rip something up or mark something up. But I also really, really like limitations and trying to get creative with that. So yeah, I just lean towards preferring games that are re-giftable or resellable. If it was something that you really, really liked, you can just, you know, give it to your friend, send it to your friend, or if it's hopefully it's something good that other people want, and if you want to resell it, we get their money into the hobby, and then you get some more money to go buy some more games. So it's just still helping grow the hobby.
I just recently bought a couple of the Deadbolt boxes, Deadbolt Mystery. And at first I was playing my first one and I was looking at it going, where do I go here? I thought it reminded me very much of a hunter killer trying to solve the murder, but it moved beyond that into puzzles and games where the hunter killers are more trying to deduce where somebody was and wasn't and how they, you know, did the murder. The deadbolts that I've played so far, I started with the Watcher. It's very, you know, there's lots of different puzzles. They have that when you solve them that you can go, oh, okay, now and move on to the next one. And once you have it all together, it was actually really cool that you could open up the final envelope and there was a whole bunch of set of new puzzles. So nice. It's like an escape room where I thought I'd open that final door and there's a whole new room of puzzles to do. It made all the difference because I was thinking, okay, these puzzles were great, but you know, now I'm at the end of this. And then I opened that envelope waiting to see who the person was that I thought it was going to be. And there was more to solve to try and figure it all out. This Lost in the Shuffle has that as well, because You can look at the deck of cards and look at each individual card. And just to give some of the examples that I've worked on already, one of the ones I did today was the Eight of Spades. And when I looked at it, it's just a bunch of spades with a border of the alphabet. And when I was looking at it, this one in particular is something that got me, especially because of my treasure hunting. Have you ever heard of a treasure hunt called Masquerade? One of the first ever treasure hunts that was ever launched. Masquerade was in England in the early 80s.
I have of course heard of it, but only because of your podcast.
Okay. Well, I'm glad there's somebody that did. But it was huge in its time. And a lot of the armchair treasure hunts that have come out since have followed along the same lines. But this card reminded me very much of that. It had the border. In this case, it was just the alphabet. And when I looked at it, just a whole bunch of different spades everywhere. And when I looked at it, I was like, I know what to do here because I studied Masquerade. And so anybody that is listening, Eight of Spades, follow the Masquerade rule, you'll solve that one in a row.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, I mean, and then there's obviously codes. And you do have a hint, not a hint page, but you do have a page of a lot of great, frequently used codes and ciphers that are really useful, obviously, when solving this as well. So are you really into codes yourself? I mean, you've done them in this, but do you have like a sort of a background in codes as well?
No, I would say no.
I like the answer.
I do. I got nothing against a good cipher, but I sort of wanted to try and have like as big a variety of puzzles as possible in the game. And so like with that, you'd have to touch on ciphers like at some point. And so I tried to go with the, you know, it's just examples of the most common ones. Like, nothing makes me more happy thinking about something, someone who's like sort of newer to the hobby playing this game and getting sort of a sense of like, you know, a whole big variety of what could be out there. So that was the initial reason why the codes, the ciphers and code sheet was included just initially.
Very nice. Now, obviously, the big one that I saw myself was the pig pen, the Masonic cipher. Mm-hmm. I've seen that used many, many times in many different things, even in the real world. I was in New York a couple of years back, and I used to run these adventure chases through New York. That's how I sort of got started in some puzzling. And there is a gravestone in Trinity Churchyard that has the Masonic cipher on the top of it.
Nice.
And when I saw that, I was like, I've got to use that in the, and I think I used it in almost every hunt I ever did in that area, just simply because you can see it from the outside of the graveyard. You don't need to actually go in. And so people that just pass Trinity can see it. But it is one of those things that you look at it and you go, why is that on a gravestone? And what does it mean? Right. And if anybody's never seen the Masonic cipher or the pig pen, it's blocky. It's lines and dots and stuff like that. At first, when you look at it, you can be confused by not knowing absolutely any idea of how that would be something that could be solved or what it could be mean. But obviously, it's all out there on the internet, so it's not going to be hard for you to solve it if you see it. But it is one of those things that you just look at and go, oh wow, and know if you look at it. And one of the things I love with these sorts of things as well is just learning a little bit more about the history. Is that it was used in the real world, and this example of it being on a gravestone is one of those things. So, moving on to, you kind of mentioned it before about the future of where you're moving to. So you've got some big ideas coming down the line. Did you want to share anything about that you might want to share? Or
sure. Yeah, so the briefcase game that I mentioned, currently the working title is If Lost, Return To. And the setup for that is you, the player, have joined up with this sort of philanthropic society called the Do-Gooder Squad. They'll send you good deeds that you need to do. And so your first good deed is someone left this briefcase in a park, and you have to find out who it belongs to so you can give it back to the rightful owner. And
I love that idea because again, it's... an idea of why you need to do what you're doing, but it's just enough that it's completely different, that it's not, oh, this was a secret briefcase left by Agent X, you know, and it doesn't get that serious where you're like, oh, am I decoding a bomb or is it going to blow up in my face? In this case, it's something fun that you like, you can get into the story of that.
Yeah. The Do-Gooder Squad, they have a little cartoon mascot named Mr. Two Shoes. he has a very annoying voice, so hopefully you'll love to hate him. And then there's certainly when you get into like what's inside the briefcase, there's, you know, it could be some sinister stuff going on, but there's also the overarching tale of like what's up with the Do-Gooder Squad? Are they actually good folks or what? And then hopefully that will be coming out relatively soon. So anytime between tomorrow and 3 years from now.
That's a good plan.
Yeah. And then I've also had an idea for a little while that's started to take some shape. I'm going to bounce this premise off you right now.
Okay. I'm ready.
So I really want to have a gift basket. That's like a fully functioning gift basket you could give to someone as a gift. But it also has some puzzling stuff, surrounding it. And so my current premise for this is that it's a bit of a murder, kidnapping mystery game. And so the gift basket shows up splattered in blood with police tape all wrapped around it. And it's called Basket Case.
I love that name. I love it.
Yeah, it's a little bit like I'm trying to reverse engineer the funny name to like a clever game afterwards. But the current premise for it is that there's a serial killer out there who, like all good serial killers, loves testing the detectives with puzzles and riddles. But lately, some of the detectives have started to complain that the puzzles are like unfair and unsolvable. So this time around, the serial killer has decided to play test the puzzles. So you've been randomly selected as a play tester. you've received this gift basket. It's made up to look just like the real one will, but with fake blood. However, the victim has been kidnapped already, so it would behoove you to just be quick about it, just to be nice to the victim. And at the very end, you fill out a customer satisfaction survey to see how how terrified you were. So it's becoming less convoluted as time goes on, but that's the current premise for that one.
I love that. I love that idea. It just and in this sort of space, you need to have that originality, because a lot of puzzle boxes, as we talked about, they're different, but they have the same premise. You were just saying, like,
sure,
a serial killer taunting the detective, or you're a private eye having to solve a crime because the police can't do it,
right.
Or something like that. So those two ideas sort of bring those same ideas together, but in a completely different way than what you'd expect.
Good. Yeah. So that's what I'm going for. You get it, Robert.
Yes. I love it. And if you need play testers, I'm your man.
Excellent.
Yeah.
You can never have enough play testers.
Oh, and if it's anything like Lost in the Shuffle, I'm all over. I'm going to love it. So I want to give you this space to let everybody that's listening know where they can find you, your games, you know, all that sort of stuff. Feel free to share everything you can.
Sure thing. SpencerIsPuzzling.com. Spencer is Puzzling on Instagram. And on Facebook, it's just my name. It's just Spencer Beebe. I'm so bad at social media. If it weren't for having a puzzle game that I'm trying to hawk online, I probably would have never posted on Instagram ever in my life. So I'm trying to get better at it, trying to get more accustomed to it.
Instagram is my worst social media myself. It's like, it doesn't really fit into the idea of my podcast. So
sure.
There's no selfies of me trying to solve a puzzle or anything like that. So
right.
It's just, I use it whenever I launch a podcast or to reach out to other people. But yeah, I'm not very good with the social medias either.
And then I'm also trying to do a YouTube series right now. So Spencer is Puzzling on YouTube, where I'll be playing through tabletop puzzle games and cutting out all the spoilers, which winds up being almost all of the footage. So I put a timer up on the screen that is in real time, in actuality, how long it took me to play the game. So the first game I played was Adrift by Rita Orloff, friend of the show. And I think it was about 3.5 hours, close to 4 hours, but it's an 8-minute video with editing out all of the spoilers. So it's meant to be silly and entertaining, and hopefully makes the game looks good, because I want more people to play good games and get addicted to this hobby.
Excellent. And I'm going to put all of those up on the show notes. Go to release.
Awesome.
So Spencer, I just want to thank you very much for coming on the show today. This has been an amazing conversation. And hopefully when you do launch your extra puzzles or the next puzzles, I want you to come back on, and then we can get you to hawk those ones for us as well. And we can talk a little bit about those as well. So hopefully I'll get you to back on as soon as we can. But again, thank you for coming on to the show.
Thank you so much. This has been great.
So now, once again, we've come to the end of another show. For all the information that doesn't make it into the podcast, as well as the links that I mentioned throughout the show, please do visit the show notes. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all with the handle at CodeBarLive, as well as follow Areas Gray. Please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts, and please do help us grow by leaving a rating and review, especially on the big one, Apple Podcast. Also, if you are interested, please consider becoming a subscriber to the show, just like Jennifer has. Shows will always be for free, but subscribers do help us cover the cost of putting out the show. So link in the show notes if interested. Thanks everybody for listening. And until next time, keep digging.